Designed to perceive. The touch sensation. Nirvimna. Distributed. Tasyam. In the skin. Roma. Hairs on the body. Mahiruha. As well as the trees. The controlling deities. Tatra. There. Cha. Also. Anta. Within. Bahi, outside. Vata tucha, the sense of touch, or the skin. Lavta, having been perceived. Guna, objects of sense perception. Vrita, generated. When there was a desire to perceive the physical characteristics of matter, such as softness, hardness, warmth, cold, lightness, and heaviness. The background of sensation, the skin pores, the hairs on the body, and their controlling deities, the trees, regenerate. Within and outside the skin is a covering of air, through which sense perception becomes prominent. Purport. The physical characteristics of matter, such as softness, are subjects of sense perception, and thus physical knowledge is the subject matter of the touch sensation. One can measure the temperature of matter by touching with the hand, and one can measure the weight of an object by lifting with the hand, thus estimating its lightness. The skin pores, and the hairs on the body are all interdependent with the touch sensation. The air blowing within and outside the skin is also an object of sense perception. This sense perception is also a source of knowledge, and therefore it is suggested here that physical or physiological knowledge is subordinate to the knowledge of the self, as above mentioned. Knowledge of self can expand to the knowledge of phenomena, but physical knowledge cannot lead to knowledge of the self. There is, however, an intimate relation between the hairs on the body and the vegetation of the body of the earth. The vegetables are nourishment for the skin, both as food and medicine, as stated in the third canto. Pacham masya vinirvinam vivishur ishmyam oshati. Translation again. When there is a desire to perceive the physical characteristics of matter, such as softness, hardness, warmth, cold, lightness, and heaviness, the background of sensation, the skin pores, the hairs on the body, and their controlling beings, the trees, regenerate. Within and outside the skin is a covering of air through which sense perception becomes prominent. We've been talking about the senses and their objects. And we've been asking you to look at your life and see how so much of your day and night can be described in terms of senses connecting with sense objects. Yesterday we spoke about the tongue. You can understand a lot of your life by watching your tongue, when it vibrates, what it tastes, and when it tastes. If you want to get a grip on your life, it's a very good exercise to chart the activity of your tongue throughout the day and night. What is my tongue doing? What's it talking about? What is it tasting? When is it tasting? And when is it talking? Of all the senses, the tongue is the most difficult to control. If you can control your tongue, there's every chance of success for controlling the rest of your senses. So much of Krishna consciousness is based on tongue control. That's the hardest thing, to control the tongue. Why do you think there's so many restaurants and cafes? Because people want to satisfy their tongue with different sensations. There's so much communication. Basically, it's coming from the tongue, the urge to talk. radio, television, internet. Still basically the same thing. The tongue wants to wag. Now, in Krishna consciousness, you actually can satisfy the tongue by engaging in Krishna's service, tasting food that's offered to Krishna, and vibrating subject matter about Krishna. Then you become peaceful, and beyond being peaceful, you become spiritually happy. You taste substantial happiness with your tongue when it's engaged in Krishna's service. Proper use of your tongue is the quickest way to verify that Krishna consciousness is for real. Now, you have other senses also. And it is true that so much of people's lives are hung up about skin perception, what the skin is doing and feeling. We see in this verse that the skin is involved with perceiving softness, hardness, warmth, cold, lightness, and heaviness. And what actually goes on when the skin feels something? Body consciousness has a lot to do with the skin. In conditioned life, your skin is very important to you. You want your skin to feel nice things. But what is actually going on with that skin perception? As you read here, there's a few things involved. There's the skin membrane itself. Then there's the skin pores, the holes in the skin, and also the hairs on the skin. All these three things are involved in feeling. There's nothing so precious and rare about skin perception and skin feeling. It's just a combination of skin membrane, skin holes, pores, and the hairs on your skin. That's what's going on. Now, how much of your life is going to be dictated because of skin, pores, and hairs on the skin? It's quite embarrassing when you think how the whole world was hung up on this skin perception, skin feelings. And then you're also told that those three things, the skin pores, and the hairs on the body, have their controlling deities. Every aspect of material existence has controlling deities. So the hairs on the body are related to the trees and the vegetation on the earth. So the trees, the vegetation on the earth, and the hair on the skin, they have controlling deities. Besides that, though, there's air blowing outside the skin, and there's air also blowing underneath the skin. That Western knowledge doesn't acknowledge, doesn't understand. But Vedic knowledge will explain different airs blowing both without and within the body, and the whole process of pranayama. Yoga is meant to control the bodily airs. So much so that you can even determine your next destination at the time of death. If you can control the bodily airs properly, you can go anywhere in the material cosmos. Because death is simply the bodily airs acting in such a way that the body will not continue and the soul leaves. Of course, by adjustment of bodily airs, you cannot go to the spiritual world. You cannot understand Krishna by adjusting the bodily airs. But you can live a very healthy life, as much as your karma allows, by adjusting bodily airs. Now, breezes are very important in people's lives. You know, when there's a nice breeze outside at the right temperature, it makes the body feel good. You notice that. That's because of the sense perception. And there's also hairs blowing within the body under the skin. When these are combined with the hairs, the pores, and the skin itself, this is what sense gratification is all about. Skin perception. What does Krishna say in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Matra sparsha sukanteya shitoshna sukha dukkha. The skin perception. Some sparshita bhoga, enjoyment through skin perception, skin feelings. This comes and goes, like the winter and summer season. You cannot become captivated by skin sensations, some sparshita bhoga. You tolerate the different sensations of the skin, just like you tolerate the coming and going of the winter and summer season. And now, you tolerate it. Similarly, the skin and its itches and sensations, you tolerate. You don't base your whole life on the skin. It's a horrible waste of time. So much of what people call romance is skin sensation. To slave your whole life just to satisfy the skin is very miserable. But people are prepared to do that. Attain the due spark to get to the Vishnu. They don't know the goal of life is Vishnu. Therefore, they struggle with their uncontrolled senses. Or they don't even struggle with their uncontrolled senses. They give in completely. And in this way, they glide down to lower species. And the lower species are more absorbed in the skin. Animal life means the material senses only, of which the skin plays a great part. So this verse is uncovering the mystery for you of what goes on with sensation. Skin sensation. It's involving the flesh, pores, hairs on the body, and their controlling deities. Plus, there's also air blowing outside, on top of the skin and under the skin. That's what it's all about. Sometimes the skin has an itch. It wants to feel things. If you can understand what this is all about, what's going on in this desire of the skin to feel things, you can free yourself from this addiction to doing the will, so to speak, of the flesh, the hair holes and hairs of the body. Who wants to serve that? But factually speaking, most people are serving their skin. Like in the ladies' world, skin is very important, right? All these lotions and creams, right? Very important. Have soft skin. Now the men, in these days, you know, the women want to become men, the men want to become women, so now the men are into it, you know? The latest thing is these, the ladies always had their boutiques where they had their hair done and the facials and all that. Now they're getting the men into it. You know, it's no longer a female thing. But, you know, have your facials and your mud packs and all that kind of stuff. The men are getting completely into it. Like, hey, we've been missing something. You know, there's a part of Maya that's been denied to us artificially by these gender distinctions. Anyway, you ever been to any men do it? No one will do it. It costs a bit of money, so. I don't think I need a man here. Stu, you did? No. Stu's pretty tight, so. So, this is all about the skin. How to become more absorbed in your skin sensations. How about a mud pack, a facial? Make your skin nice and soft. Nice and sensitive and shine. If you really want your skin to shine, then take up spiritual qualities. Everyone can notice that devotees have a bit of a glow to them. It's not actually the skin, though. It's due to devotional service. Devotees get a countenance or a disposition that becomes radiant. But people are convinced that they'll make their skin very nice by all this cosmetic care. Still, when they see a devotee, many of them can see, oh, I've never seen a glow like that before. It doesn't come in any bottle. There's no lotion for it. simply purified living, purified lifestyle. Any of you, when you first met devotees, you thought they were glowing? Any of you thought that? Yeah. What did you think the reason was? Or you thought they had some special lotion or something? Yes, by practicing Krishna consciousness, as Krishna has given it, you become joyful, and that joyfulness radiates from the body. Just being free from sinful activity gives you a glow, what to speak of, when you positively engage in Krishna's service. Now, to practice bhakti yoga, we've got to get out from under the gun of material senses. You have to recognize the demands of the material senses. And the skin certainly demands. The hairs on the skin, the flesh, the hair holes, they demand certain experiences. So you have to recognize that and learn not to take it seriously. Don't have your life dictated by some sparsha bhoga, the dictates of the skin to feel softness and warmth and something. In hot weather, you want to feel cool things, the skin wants to feel cool things. In cold weather, the skin wants to feel warm things. You're going to spend your whole life working for that, being captivated by that? Therefore, in Vedic culture, sense gratification is regulated, restricted. So that some people don't spend their whole life just laboring for their skin. If you really want ultimate skin happiness in this material cosmos, you can go to heavenly planets. There, the Shastra describes, the ladies have bodies which are cooling in the summer, warming in the winter. So if you want the ultimate in skin happiness, you can go to the heavenly planets. It's much better to go to Krishna. Going to Krishna means going to devotional service. This way you're simultaneously free from slavery to your material skin, and you are bound to Krishna in love. That is the real point of existence. Well, think about the information that this verse is giving. The Srimad Bhagavatam is giving a clear understanding. I think later in this chapter, somewhere in the second canto, it's explained why people feel lust. Why there is that itch. It's something put there in the skin by the devas, by the demigods, so that people will reproduce. It is explained in the Bhagavatam that on certain parts of the body, the demigods have put a certain pleasure-giving substance on the skin, and therefore people are impelled to interact with those parts of the body, and in this way the population increases. That's all that's going on. Why come under the control of that? Should be able to recognize things for what they are. Why are some parts of the body deemed so, so important in a certain way, and others aren't? And other parts of the body aren't. Some sparsha bhoga or touch sensations of certain parts of the body cause people's whole life to change. Or they'll work so hard just to get that sense skin present. Why? Because the demigods have made this scam. Otherwise, if there's none of this material pleasure coming from certain parts of the body, no one will take the trouble to reproduce. So they encourage the process of the demigods have done that. They've just taken ordinary skin that's described here, skin pores, hairs on the body, and the demigods have, you could say, smeared a pleasure-giving potency on certain parts of the skin, and therefore you become absorbed in thinking about those parts of the body. Those parts of the body have some acute sensitivity, especially in relation to the opposite sex. And in this way, you become under the control of your skin. When you understand what's going on, then you have a chance to detach yourself from the slave. This same skin that seems to promise you pleasure, some parts of the skin seem to promise you pleasure, that same skin will cause you so much pain. Material existence means sukha dukkha, happiness and distress. You have to have both sides of the coin. That means sometimes you'll think you're happy and sometimes you'll think you're miserable. It's going to always be like that. The same skin that seems to give you pleasure will give you such pain. For example, down under Australia, New Zealand, it's the world's capital for skin cancer. Do you ever know anybody who's had skin cancer? So painful. The same skin that gave so much pleasure, now it gives such pain you just want to die. So why base your life on this? Right down here on Vivian Street in Cuba Mall, there's so many enterprises based on skin. Do you want the good skin? Do you want to touch the skin? And people spend lots of money for that. Let's see the skin. Spend more money? Let's touch the skin. And then you have a successful weekend? No. You just become more addicted to material illusion. That's why in Vedic culture there is protocol, there are procedures for how people can relate so they don't increase their illusion in identifying with the body, absorbing themselves in some sparsha devota skin perception. Everything is carefully considered in a real civilization so that the human being will go back to God. We should think about these things. Why should I work so hard? Why should my meditation be concerned so much with the skin? When you're a teenager, once you're past puberty, you become very conscious of your skin in relation to the opposite sex. Teenagers rarely can understand how they're spending so much energy dealing with the skin. They get bewildered by their own bodies, the new sensations that their skin is able to feel because they're past the age of 12 or 13. Things that they never felt through their skin before when they were 8 or 9. It's all just physiological. But so much energy is spent dealing with that physiology. As we were speaking on Sunday, and notice by the time young people today reach the age of 18 or 19, they already have a ghostly look to them. They look ashen. They look gray, wrinkled, and shriveled. Because they spent their teenage years trying to satisfy the skin. And this way they became exhausted, frustrated, depleted in energies. Because of too much sexual indulgence. What society tells them is normal and great fun and pleasure turns out to be the thing that depletes them so much. It makes them look so ashen and gray and unclean. Did you ever notice, once you started practicing bhakti yoga, how suddenly you start to be able to see how unclean people look. You ever notice? You didn't see it before. Because of their habits, their skin is ashen and gray, pale and ghostly. So many young people look like that by the time they're 20, certainly, because of overabsorption in trying to satisfy the skin. They're very sickly, their memories are weak, they can't concentrate. But when they take to Krishna consciousness and purify themselves, then they look radiant, in spite of so much simple activity previously. If they agree to leave that aside and take up Krishna's instructions, they become radiant. Now how can we properly take up Krishna's instructions? How can we carry the sword of knowledge without dropping it? We need a proper lifestyle. As you know, we're always counseling devotees here to be for real about where they're at and how they can smoothly arrange for their spiritual progress. We're for organic development of spiritual life, not these sudden lurches and, you know, shooting stars. Those of us who've been practicing Krishna consciousness for several decades, we've seen all this before. In our youth, we've seen people, you know, one minute there, and they fully surrendered Paramahansas, the next minute. We've seen all these movies. So, therefore, we're endeavoring to provide a place where persons can make honest, gradual spiritual advancement, so that they become in touch with their problems and their advantages. We don't want people using Krishna consciousness as an excuse to hide from their problems. Krishna consciousness is the means to deal with your problems. And these days, everyone's problematic. Srila Prabhupada gave an instruction in several places, Los Angeles and Australia, but most devotees did not hear it. He said that it's better that people not join temples immediately. He said it's best that they stay in their homes and study the books, and gradually when they become convinced, then they can take up austerities of ashram life. But very few persons, very few devotees actually could understand what Prabhupada was saying, because this is back in the 60s and 70s where so many young people were coming to the temples just out of countercultural reasons. It was like the fad. So devotees thought, hey, they're all coming. Yeah. They come on Saturday, by Monday they'll be Paramahansas. That's the way we thought back then. Devotees used to talk amongst themselves. Well, in 8 years you'll have a body made of Mahaprasad. in 10 years you'll be a Mahabhagwan. In Western culture, everything is instant. You know, instant coffee, you know, instant spiritual life, you know, instant enlightenment. So, in the course of teaching Krishna consciousness for several decades, we've learned a few things. Krishna consciousness is a lifetime commitment. So we have to arrange our life very intelligently for steady and real, genuine progress. Not that, wow, yeah, this looks great, I think I'll just drop out of society and turn on. Turn on with Krishna consciousness. Yes, if you're strong, you can do that. But we have seen that the effects of society, the negative effects of society, are so strong these days that it's very rare that someone is just immediately able to practice Krishna consciousness fully in a healthy, organic way. Almost everyone needs some time to simmer on the stove. The preparation needs to simmer And then you need guidance to tell you when the preparation is just about to be done. In this way, you don't disturb yourself, and you don't disturb others. The shooting stars are very disturbing to others. And one minute, honey boo! Next minute, well, where is he? I haven't seen him in a week. I haven't seen him in a month. Very disturbing, isn't it? Better that we do as Prabhupada said. We allow the preparations to simmer on the stove and gradually cook, and then at the right time, you can see who is suitable for living where. Krishna consciousness is the art of the possible for doing the impossible. It is possible to arrange your life intelligently, but it requires some honesty. We have to face some problems that we have that we're bringing from our previous backgrounds. We have to deal with those things. Not use the philosophy as an excuse to hide from ourselves, our material selves. Srimad Bhagavatam is not some kind of armchair philosophy. It's an action process for purification and connection to Krishna. But if you treat the Bhagavatam like it's some kind of metaphysical belief system and don't understand that the Bhagavatam involves you, then you can hide behind such a vision of the Bhagavatam. It's a philosophy, it's a belief. I'm going to hide behind it and use it to hide from myself. No. You use the Bhagavatam to operate on yourself. It's a source of stability. As you make natural, healthy, and organic development in Krishna consciousness, it's easy to have a taste because you're being honest. With an honest frame of mind, you can taste the holy name, you can taste Srimad Bhagavatam. The taste comes from chanting Hare Krishna, rendering service to Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We're trying to train all of you to become self-sufficient in Krishna consciousness within the association of devotees. Both things go together, self-sufficiency and association. You must associate with devotees, but you cannot abdicate. You know what that word abdicate means? You know what abdicate means? You cannot relinquish your responsibility to be self-sufficient. Generally, you think that the two things are opposite, self-sufficiency and relating to others. No, the two are together. We're trying to teach you something very subtle. How to be self-sufficient and independent within the association of devotees. Normally, you think these two things cancel each other out. They don't. So it's a very great art how to do this. Krishna consciousness is not a club where you come and hide from yourself. It's a club for dealing with yourself. So therefore, when I see persons sincerely, but unrealistically attempting to use Krishna consciousness to hide from themselves, I stop them because it won't work. We've seen all this decade after decade. Get a good solid foundation, get a good grounding. Use the Bhagavatam to transform yourself. And then we can see when the preparation has simmered to its proper point, nicely done, then we can see, well, what kind of life is best for you. It's like our students done that very nicely. It's a good example. Even paced. Right? When you first started Krishna consciousness, you didn't kind of just come in like a blazing star and disappear 6 months later. I'm sure in your time here, you've seen a few of those, right? better take one step after the other, and then get to a point where you naturally feel strong and capable of, you know, going further. That was Prabhupada's idea. When you naturally feel convinced, you naturally feel comfortable, and then you think, I can take up a bigger step, or I can take on a more concentrated, more saturated lifestyle. Then there's no jolt and disturbance to yourself and to the society of devotees. 1 minute, honey, everything. Next minute. Imagine the old days, you know, sometimes a brahmachari would go into a deep meditation, personal, like let me say, a major moment in life, deep in thought in the ashram, kind of figured out by tomorrow morning, kind of make that decision by tomorrow morning, either I'm going to take sannyas or I'm getting married. Can I have it all figured out by tomorrow morning? It's one way or the other. Either I take sannyas or I get married. Just that kind of mentality shows this is not organic development. You're not ready. Actually, you're not ready for either. You're not ready for marriage or something else. You have to be in touch with yourself so that your life plays out in a smooth, organic way, instead of all these lurches, all these jarring changes and jarring shifts of the gear. Yeah, I just went somewhere for the weekend, and I'm really fired up. That's nice, but we can see how these things play out. In the course of time, we have to see your whole span of existence, your whole life, and how it can grow up smoothly in Krishna consciousness. And part of growing up smoothly in Krishna consciousness means to deal with yourself. Be healthy physically and mentally, even though you're not the body, you're not the skin, as we've been reading about here. You still have an obligation to have as healthy a body and mind as you can without being fanatical about it. Because these things are used in Krishna's service. If you have physical or mental problems, you have to do your best to solve these things. It's your responsibility for your equipment that you use in serving Krishna. Not that you just ignore it all and Haribol. Well, part of the Haribol is to understand my body and mind belong to Krishna. I have to keep that equipment in top shape as best I can. I mean, there's always problems with things made of matter. But we always want, you know, something quick. I can give myself as an example, just like I went to one tutor for private yoga classes because I'm traveling on airplanes so much, body was cramped. I didn't tell the teacher I was coming from Gaur Yoga Center. In other words, hey, we got to find yoga teachers who are really into the body. Our yoga teachers are too transcendental. So I had to find a real body conscious yoga teacher. Our Jen definitely found a body conscious yoga teacher. he's on top of, you know, like, he's aware of every muscle movement in his body. You know, when he moves his arm, it's just like, you know, he's aware of every chain reaction muscle movement, you know. Well, it was amazing, wasn't it? Try. I couldn't imagine thinking like that all the time, you know. Who knows, my day may show up here, so. I will tell you, I will give you more details.
Yeah?
You never know, I'm going to listen to the tape. Small city in a small country. So, anyway, you need a good auto mechanic. Okay, you find the best garage as possible for the best mechanic. So he's definitely a very good auto mechanic for the vehicle of the body. So I said, look, I just want to learn the Surya Namaskar, you know, something I can do, you know, when I'm traveling when there's no swimming pools around, so I just get some exercise, you know. He said, oh yeah, yeah, okay, I can teach you that. Yeah. But then he proceeded to show me for an hour how, you know, you got to crawl before you can walk. You've got to learn all the little basic things. Yeah. Just how to move your arms and legs before you can start getting into asanas. So at the end, I had to agree. Yeah, there's going to be no instant coffee here. You know, I had it all in mind. You know, yeah, you just show me how to do the asana. You know, that'll be it, you know. But then you proceeded to show how every muscle is connected to another. And if you just move your arm, the muscles on your forearm properly, then the muscles on the shoulders relax. You know, just by doing that. Whereas most people are thinking, you know, you just grunt and groan and, you know, and that gets the job done. So I had to agree. This body mechanic, he knows his job, he knows the machine. At the same time, I was very happy that I'm not thinking like that. I'm boring. No wonder people like the yoga classes. I'm so dry. Here they get exciting personalities. Where else can you go and find a yoga teacher like you again? Such exquisite atmosphere, wonderful prasad. You don't find it anywhere. I think Jen says she's checked out the various other schools. So they're all pretty dry. Huh? He definitely knows the body, you know. I couldn't live like that. I mean, you know, just 100% absorbed in every muscle of your body. It's a way of lording it over material nature. You're 100% tuning something that's declining and dying. It's a losing battle. You're going to lose for sure. So therefore, devotee thinks, I am going to lose this body. There's no way I can win, but let me make the best use of a bad bargain. I'll keep it in shape as best I can, knowing ultimately I'm going to lose. But, you know, those kind of guys can't think like that. They actually, you know, every movement, every muscle, you know, is leading them to success in life. Again, the breathing, the muscles. Of course, if I could know all the things he knew, and at the same time be Krishna conscious, I wouldn't. So, this is an example of how I thought, yeah, I'll just learn a few quick asanas, that'll be it, you know. But no, he showed me. You got to crawl before you can walk. You got to take things step by step and organically develop. So that's actually our approach to spiritual activity. No overnight sensations, shooting stars, but gradual development. All right, any questions?
Mm-hmm.
The chanting will illuminate them. And then you should deal with them. Not chanting. The chanting will let you see. Then you can work on these things. No one's going to live your life for you. That's one thing I make clear here. No one's going to live your life for you. You have to deal with yourself in a responsible way. In the early days of Krishna consciousness, we had that misunderstanding, so many of us. Not that Prabhupada was that, but we just, okay, I just, you know, take on bhakti and my life is automatically lived for me. No. Bhakti is the most powerful way for you to get a grip on your life and deal with your own life. I just become part of the ashram and my life just moves on automatically on a conveyor belt. Otherwise, in the name of Krishna consciousness, we can do ourselves harm and do others harm. This way, sometimes devotees who misapply Krishna consciousness live like double lives. And that's very disturbing to themselves and to others. The Bhagavatam is so great, its message is so sublime. That's me, the Bhagavatam. But then you look at the life and you see something else. But the same person can't see his or her own life because the Bhagavatam is so great. Because I'm identifying with the Bhagavatam, therefore. Meanwhile, one has personal problems, one's not here. Yes, the Bhagavatam is great and it's inspiring us to deal with ourselves. So we become healthy servants of Krishna. And we should appreciate the devotees for providing us an atmosphere in which we can deal with ourselves. That's why here, people can detect. The most important thing here is not hatha yoga. Martial arts, or this or that, or whatever happens to be offered. The number one thing is that we care for each other. We're caring for everyone. That's the number one thing. The atmosphere of care, that honesty and reality, dealing with reality. Or sometimes visiting devotees think, oh, wow, yeah, this is a great idea. We'll just go back to our cities, open up a yoga school, and it'll all happen. No, that's, you know, whether it's a yoga class or a martial arts class or whatever we come up with at the moment, that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is caring for each other, taking care of whoever comes our way, and learning how to live a responsible, balanced life, and teaching that to others. So that is what provides the magic of the experience. About what we discussed in the past. Chanting, you're making gradual progress. come a long way. Go on chanting Hare Krishna. Go on reading Srimad Bhagavatam. The process is working on you. Be patient and humble. The right formula is our whole process of bhakti yoga as given by Krishna. Take that. Be patient. Just like I have to be patient with my body yoga. It's not like instant coffee, you know. Suppose I, while the yoga teacher was teaching me the asanas, or the preliminary steps of the asanas, I kept peppering with questions at every moment. Oh, what about this muscle? Why did it move like that? Oh, I suddenly felt my chest muscle go like that. What about, you know? I'd be wasting time and money, wouldn't I? I've got to kind of let him, you know, reveal his process and you follow, you know? And then after the class, I felt the result. My physical body was very relaxed. But I felt like I didn't do anything in the class. But then afterwards, the physical effect was there. So I had to admit he knows what he's doing in terms of that. But if I just peppered him with questions, you know, I would have wasted his time, my time, and Krishna's money. That's a material side benefit of what we teach here, how to learn properly. To learn properly, you have to be able to hear submissively. Getting better. Just chant Hare Krishna. Any else questions? I've never seen it happen. These days. I've seen it happen in the early days, during the countercultural days, where a few who Prabhupada personally raised in. Otherwise, I've never seen it happen. And if you had Prabhupada's personal association in India in those days, your life was austere. Do you know what the first Grihastha residences were like in Calcutta? I don't know. But Prabhupada had a few couples with him, householder couples, married couples. So he brought them to Calcutta to establish this kind there. So he said, okay, there's a room. Divide it with sheets, and you know, those were the living quarters for each Grihastha couple, you know. That was the best that could be provided at the time. So, of course, they got the nectar associated with Prabhupada. There's always this tendency that I'll just go here and all my problems will be solved. No, you have to have guidance that will honestly get you to see where you're at and how to move ahead. It's not like, well, I'll just go here and hide away and hide from myself and it'll just happen automatically. Guidance is essential. Mature guidance, how to advance in life. And then you need facility so that you can grow. An organic atmosphere.